I think of ourselves more as an education company than a real estate company, because at the very beginning, it was all about education because people didn't know what this thing was about.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I am your host, Justin Dixon, and I've got Annie Dickerson on the podcast today. This is a really interesting podcast. We dig into her background, where she started out as a teacher for Teach for America and kind of fell backwards into real estate investing through house hacking when her realtor in DC, when they were helping her with her first home, instead of buying a condo, pushed her in the direction of maybe buying a duplex and being able to rent out one of the units to generate some cash flow. Then in 2017, started investing in small multifamily fourplexes in Huntsville, Alabama, even though she was living out in the Bay Area. And then in January of 2018, she quit her job to really focus on real estate investing full time and met Julie Lamb and created Good Egg Investments. Now they've raised millions of dollars across multiple asset classes, including hotels. They're getting into storage and industrial. So we unpack a lot of this stuff. And they also do some crowdfunding to bring in some equity for their real estate deals, which is super fascinating. So let's get Annie on the pod. All right, Annie, hey, welcome to the podcast. Happy to have you on.
I'm thrilled to be here with you and your listeners, Justin.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you being here. So maybe kind of let's get started with your background. So tell us about how you got into real estate investing and maybe a little bit about what you did before you kind of made that transition.
Oh boy, I did all sorts of things before I got into real estate. In fact, I never wanted to get into real estate. It was never part of the plan. Growing up, I wasn't even aware that real estate investing was really a thing. Nobody around me did real estate investing. My parents were kind of fearful of the stock market and they never bought a house of their own. So all growing up, we lived in rental homes. And I graduated college and I joined Teach for America. So I started out as a fourth grade teacher. And then I went into game design because I wanted to make educational games. And then I got into learning and development, creating trainings for companies. And so here I was, totally focused on my own career path and focused on the corporate ladder. And my husband on the side, out of the blue, gets into real estate. And I'm like, all right, do your thing, get it out of your system. And he became a realtor when we moved to the Bay Area about 10 years ago now. As he built his business along the way, he asked me to kind of help with his business. And I was so reluctant at first. I was like, no. You do your business. I'm going to do my career thing over here. Right. But he talked me into it. So I took his website under my wing. And so that summer, this was summer of 2017, I was running all around Oakland, Berkeley, the East Bay, and taking pictures and videos for his website. So we launched the website that fall. And this is how little I knew about marketing at the time. After we did the whole website, all the branding, all the pictures, everything, then I said, who's your target audience? And so at that point, he told me it was people like us who wanted to get started in real estate investing because we had been doing it in bits and pieces on the side.
Okay.
So I said, okay, well, if you want to help people who want to get into real estate investing, I think there's this thing called content marketing. I think I have to like teach people how to do it. And so at that point, I kind of fell into the real estate investing rabbit hole and started first just building our own portfolio. In fact, I wanted to quit my job to just do real estate, but just invest for ourselves, these small multifamilies. And one thing led to another. I quickly realized that we had lots of friends and family who wanted to invest in real estate also, but they didn't want to do any of the work.
Yeah.
So in looking for a solution for them, that's when I discovered the power of passive investing and syndications. And so that was about 5 years ago now.
Okay. So you mentioned kind of that real estate really wasn't part of the journey. And then your husband kind of pulled you into it a little bit via his website. And then at what point did you start to say, okay, well, we want to start to actually invest in real estate. Like, what was the trigger point or what was the reason why real estate was a vehicle versus the stock market? Or obviously you are working in W-2. So I imagine the company you work for had a 401k or some type of investment vehicle or retirement vehicle there. So why real estate? Like, how did that kind of start?
So actually we had started investing. So I mentioned right out of college, I was a teacher. And so my husband and I got married young. We were 23 when we got married, and we followed the whole plan. We were like, okay, married, we got to buy a house next. That's the next thing on the checklist. So we actually did, but we were living in Washington, D.C. at the time. And we were fortunate to have this really great realtor who we were looking at all the condos and lofts. We thought we were going to be cool. You know, we were in our 20s and, and said, yeah, those are nice, but you might want to look at something more practical. And in DC, there's all these row homes, and a lot of them are not one, but two units. And he said, if you play your cards right, you could live in one unit, rent out the other. Eventually, you could get it to be cash flow positive. And so that was my first introduction into this idea of real estate investing. And it seemed fairly doable to me because I would be living in the same place and just renting out a part of the home that I was living in. And so that's when we started when we were 23, and that whole house hacking model worked for us. So we started to just rinse and repeat with that. So we named them after letters of the alphabet. So we had Alpha, then Bravo, then Charlie, and then Delta. And so we kind of had proven out this model that real estate worked, but like every few years we'd buy one and then we'd move out of the previous one and rent that out. And so we knew that it was a model that was working. So at the point when I decided to become more serious about real estate investing, I already had a proof of concept. It was just, I had never invested in a property that I didn't personally live in. So that was a whole learning curve in and of itself.
Yeah. So you were kind of doing house hacking, maybe even before house hacking was like the buzzword or the term that you were kind of one of the pioneers. And that's actually really interesting because if you're looking at condos, you have neighbors right next to you, right? So you're sharing walls still. So this is for you, kind of would feel like the same thing, but you're also a landlord. So you had to deal with some of the other things that you wouldn't have to deal with if you were actually living in a condo. So you moved to the Bay Area. And then at what point did you kind of make the shift of, I want to quit my job and kind of get into this full time?
So I mentioned I did teaching, then game design, and then instructional design. And so by the time that this real estate thing came around, I'd been out of college for 10 years. I had 9 different jobs. And so I was exhausted from this W-2 game. I just could not find the right fit for me. And now in hindsight, I know it's because I was meant to be an entrepreneur.
Right.
But I was trying to fit my entrepreneur mold into a W-2 world, and it just wasn't working. And it had never occurred to me at that point that there was another way. I just thought, I got a hammer and everything looks like a nail. I just got to keep looking for jobs. And one of these jobs is going to be the magic ticket.
Right.
And it never occurred to me that maybe there's another way. Maybe I don't have to have a job. So when I started to look into real estate investing, that was the real aha moment. Even though we had been house hacking all these years, I never really put two and two together because the house hacking was, we did one every few years and it was just a few hundred dollars a month. Yeah. I never thought that it could be a model that could scale. But when I looked into real estate investing seriously, I realized, wait a second, if I acquire X number of these rental homes, each one producing a few hundred dollars a month, that starts to add up. And then I thought, wait, then I could start to replace my salary and then I don't have to work at all. How great would that be? And so that was the aha moment. I didn't know exactly the ins and outs of how I was going to get it done, but it was a paradigm shift for me at that point.
Yeah. And so was it just the experience or did you kind of have like a light bulb moment, like reading a book or listening to a podcast? Or was it just like you started to see the breadcrumbs and you started to follow them and say, oh, this is actually kind of the way that I'm going to do this?
It was during this period I mentioned I fell into the real estate investing rabbit hole, and it was the only thing I could think about and do any moment that I had. And so every time I walked the dog, I had a podcast playing, Bigger Pockets podcast, real estate investing podcast. And I remember one day I was out walking the dog. Somebody was talking about something I never heard about before, the Burr method. And they didn't even explain it. They were just like, they assumed that the audience knew what it meant. Right. I was like, Burr method, what is that? So I went home, I Googled it. I think I spelled it like B-U-R-R because I was like, I have no idea what this means.
Right.
So I Googled it and I realized, for anybody who's listening who might be in those shoes right now walking your dog. Yeah, I was
going to say, why don't you explain it a little bit?
Yes, tell you what it means. And so Burr is actually B with, I think, four R's behind it. And so it stands for buy, rehab or renovate, rent out, refinance and repeat. And so it was that repeat piece that really caught my attention because I thought, wait a second, this is a repeatable model. So what these people are doing is they're buying a property that's undervalued that needs some renovation, needs some rehab right. or love. And so they're doing that work, they're rolling up their sleeves and they're doing that work, making it nice, kind of like a fix and flip, but they're not selling it right off the bat. They're holding on to it. Then they're renting it out. And once they rent it out and they've got that income coming in, they can refinance it. There's a higher value now yep. for that property. They can refinance it, pull out that initial capital that they had invested and then repeat. Now they can go buy a new property. And that was the aha moment for me.
Got it.
Prior to that, I had never thought that this was a scalable thing. I thought, well, every few years we save up enough money right. and then we buy a thing. And I'd never thought, wait a second, this can be a cyclical thing. This can generate income to then go and repeat and do it again.
No, that's super fascinating. And I want to kind of dig into Good Egg because I know Good Egg's behind you on your wall. But before we jump into that, let's take a quick sponsor break.
Whether you're in a job you love or hate, building a financial foundation is important. This foundation can support you by providing passive income, stability in an uncertain economy, or the launching pad for you to start your own business. Great Venture Capital helps busy professionals invest in commercial real estate to build passive income streams, grow wealth, and take advantage of tax benefits. If you'd like to learn more, check us out at greatventurecapital.com or send an email to justin@greatventurecapital.com.
All right, we are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast with Annie Dickerson. We're kind of at a point in your journey where you're just kind of getting this bug. You kind of talked a little bit about the Burr method before we took a break, but now I want to talk a little bit more about kind of what you're doing now. Because obviously I know you from Good Egg Investments and helping to build some of our marketing and automation on our website. So talk us through where you went from this Burr method strategy to quitting your job. And then obviously you've got a business partner. So let's kind of dig into kind of what you're doing over the last handful of years.
So once I had that aha moment, immediately I was like, oh my gosh, this is what I need to be doing. I need to figure this out. And so we live in the Bay Area where it's very expensive. So I quickly realized, okay, I might not be able to do this here. It would take too long to save up another down payment, but we've got money where we could invest it in another market out of state. And so I started by researching all these different markets and we quickly settled on Huntsville, Alabama. This was 2017. And so at the time, Huntsville, Alabama, not a lot of people knew about it. It was kind of an up and coming market and fit a lot of our criteria at the time. And so we quickly built up a portfolio of, I think it was four fourplexes, so 16 doors in Huntsville, Alabama. And I was so giddy. I was like, yeah, this is going to be great. I'm following all of the everything that everybody's saying and I'm doing the underwriting. I got this. This is so easy. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, months down the road, things started to fall apart. But in the meantime, I was like, okay, I really enjoy doing this. Every time that I would get together with friends and family, it was all I could talk about. And so, of course, they wanted to learn it too. And I'd start telling them all the steps in the process. And they said, wait. No. You misunderstood. I don't want to do any of the work. I have this money here that's sitting here that's doing nothing. Could I just maybe put it into the next fourplex or something that you're buying? And at the time, I knew nothing about group investing. And I thought, well, I don't know. These properties are kind of small. There's not really a lot of room. Right. And so I said, well, good luck. But I had so many of these conversations. Again, I had another light bulb moment. I said, wait a second. All these people have the same problem. And they don't know how to fix that problem, but I know how to do this. I just need that missing piece where I can kind of bring them all together.
Right.
So I started digging. And that's when I discovered syndications. And here's the part where it lit a match under me. because once I discovered syndications, I was furious because I was like, wait a second, I've been doing all this work to find and invest in these rental properties. Nobody told me I could do this as a passive investor. Right. Nobody told me that I could just park my money with somebody else. They could do all the work.
Yeah, you're doing all this work for a couple of $100 a month. And then you're like, wait, I could have taken all this capital and put it into some bigger deals and made some more money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not only that. So I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this exists. And second, I was like, why don't more people know about this? I can't believe at that point I had been investing in real estate for 10 years. I had never heard of anything like that before. And so I said, okay, well, now that I know about this, I can't just brush it under the rug. I've got to go out and tell people about this because I know the power of real estate and I know that it can change lives. And so that's when I really seriously considered quitting my job. And in fact, in January of 2018, I did quit my job and I was working as a creative director at the time. Great salary, great benefits. I left that behind having never done a syndication of my own before. And having really no backup plan, I was just like, one way or another, I'm going to figure this out.
Yeah.
And as luck or as the universe would have it, the very next week after I quit my job, I met my now business partner, Julie, at a conference. And
oh, very cool. Mm-hmm. So I guess let's talk a little bit about the transition from you meeting Julie and I guess maybe how did that kind of start and then from meeting somebody at a conference to then being like, okay, let's start a business together. Cause obviously it tends to be a longer term relationship and can have some negative outcomes if it's not set up properly and aligned and all that fun stuff. So how did Good Egg kind of form at that conference?
So at that conference, the business cards I brought, Justin, didn't even have any business name on them. They were literally just like Annie Dickerson. It had my Gmail email on them. And it was just a picture of me with my son on it. And I started handing those out. But at that conference, it's better these days. But back then, there were very few women at this commercial real estate conference and even fewer Asian women. And Julie and I are both Asian women. And so we kind of got connected that way, started up a conversation and quickly realized we're in this business because we wanted to help other moms and other women to get into real estate investing. And so we connected on that level, but we didn't partner up right away because just like dating, you don't jump into marriage right away. We didn't even consider a partnership at that point. In fact, I left the conference and I started to build up Good Egg. I launched this new brand and she was building her own business at the time.
Oh, interesting.
And her business was called Lamb Capital Group. So we were each doing our separate things within the same circles when we kept in touch, saw each other at a few more conferences. And then a few months later, because we're both based in the Bay Area, at least at the time, we decided to meet up in the city and grab coffee. At that point, I still remember it clear as day. We were sitting across the table from each other and she said, so now that you've been in the business a few months, what do you love about this? And I said, oh my gosh, Julie, if I could just create content all day long, the blog posts and the videos and the courses, oh my gosh, I would be in heaven. Yeah. The one thing that I wish I could just take off my calendar are those investor calls. So I love investors and this is why we're doing it, but it just breaks up the flow of my day. I can't get into that creative flow. And she's looking at me all wide-eyed and she's like, wait, I love that part. She's like, I live for those phone calls. It's the blog posts that kill me. She's like, I sit there, the cursor's blinking at me. And I have no idea what to write.
Got it.
So that's when we started to seriously explore a partnership.
So you guys were the yin to the yang kind of thing. You love things that the other person hated. And that's typically a marriage made in heaven. And so you had Good Egg kind of created. And so now you guys kind of combine companies, it sounds like. And so what is your role in the syndications that you go after? Or maybe start at the beginning and kind of how did that first syndication go? Because as listeners know, there's multiple areas of a syndication that you can get involved in. You can be the deal finder and actually go out and find these and underwrite these deals. You can be an asset manager. You can also raise money for these deals to obviously get them across the finish line. So maybe talk us through kind of how maybe the first syndication went and what part of the syndication process you were involved in.
So our role has really evolved over time. And if you asked me then, I would have no idea that we'd end up where we are now. We were just, it's like when you find a great hole in the wall restaurant and you're like, oh, I just got to tell everybody about this. You never intend to get into the restaurant business yourself. That's kind of how it went for us. And so we started out as just investors ourselves. And we said, hey guys, we've found these great things. And within our network, we know all these great sponsors of these deals. We can give you access. And so that's really how it started. And I think of ourselves more as an education company than a real estate company, because at the very beginning, it was all about education because people didn't know what this thing was about. And so it was all about teaching people, okay, getting them familiar with it, getting them comfortable with it. And so in those early days, it really was like we'd connect with somebody within our sphere who had an open opportunity. And they said, hey, do you want to come alongside and maybe take on some responsibility, but also raise a little bit of capital? So we'd raise maybe $500,000, maybe $1 million per deal that we were doing at the time. And this was 2018 when we started. So the first year, I think we did 9 or 10 deals that way.
Okay.
Second year, another 9 or 10 deals. And so our investors got very used to this flow of we'd open up a deal, but because we had such limited capacity for what we were bringing, it'd fill up very quickly.
Yeah.
And which created great demand. And it was a great way to grow our business because people, they always want what they can't get. Right.
Right. Oh, I missed that one. Give me the next one. When's the next one?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And so we started to build up our investor community. And after those first couple of years, then we started to be able to raise more and more capital into the $2, $3, $4, $5 million at a time. And then at that point, all of a sudden we said, wait a second, now we can go to these sponsors and we can negotiate perhaps a little bigger piece of the pie for us and our investors. And so within the last few years, not only have we done that, because we're bringing more investors to these opportunities, we also have a bigger responsibility because we have a bigger group of investors. And so we've now brought acquisitions in-house. We've brought asset management in-house. So we have all those skill sets in-house, whereas before it was just me and Julie telling people about this great restaurant we knew. Now we're bringing on the actual people with the skill sets so that we can participate in a meaningful way in each deal from start to finish.
Interesting. So your business really has evolved from being kind of the education, capital raising, bringing investment opportunities to your sphere of influence, your friends and family, to now having a fully integrated acquisition real estate investment shop where you have people that are finding deals, underwriting, and then are you able to, at this point, to kind of just take down these? And typically you're going after what, 100 plus unit apartment complexes? Is that the kind of strategy, if you will?
Yes.
Got it. So that's super interesting because I think when you and I started working together from a marketing standpoint, it was a year or two ago, and I don't think you had the full integration at that point. So this is recently, right?
Yeah. Within the last couple of years, we've grown our team to now about 10 people. So we have all those skill sets in-house, which is such a benefit for both us and our investors to have those skill sets and to be able to take a little bit more control in each of these deals, which some of them we are able to take down on our own now. And some of them we do so in more of a joint venture model.
Got it. So we're recording this in mid-July 2023. Obviously, the last few years and potentially when you kind of started bringing all these things in-house, the market was solving a lot of problems by just rents going through the roof and cap rates being compressed and very low interest rates. And now we're kind of in the exact opposite. Rents aren't growing as fast. Interest rates are through the roof. So I guess what has changed in your strategy from an acquisition standpoint to still find deals for your investors? Because investors that I'm talking to, some are nervous, right? They kind of want to hold on to a little bit more cash, which you could argue one way or the other if that's a smarter or not smart strategy. But then you've got other investors that are like, I want to deploy this capital because inflation is killing me and I want to get into something that's a little bit more kind of resistant to that and more stable and can produce some returns. So how has your kind of process changed just in the last 18 months in this high inflation, high interest rate market?
It's certainly a different world out there right now than a few years ago. Definitely agree with you there. So there's a lot of ways that we've shifted our overall strategy. One way is we don't solely invest in multifamily. We're looking and we're investing in alternative assets, one of which is hotels.
Got it.
And so multifamily, we still very much believe in the fundamentals of multifamily, and we're still investing in multifamily, but we're looking at creative strategies. For example, we have a deal under contract right now where we are assuming a HUD loan. And this is a new development, and these types of HUD loans aren't available if you're just buying an existing multifamily property. These are development loans. And so we're assuming this loan, and it's at a low fixed rate of 3.8%, where we couldn't get that if we were to initiate a new loan right now. And so we're looking for opportunities like that, where we can still find strong performing assets, but with also strong financing options, creative financing options. And so, of course, those are harder to find. And so it's taking us a little bit longer. We're having to look at more deals, but we are not compromising our underwriting standards. But I mentioned hotels because so that came about through a great partnership that we formed a few years ago with these hotel operators out of the Midwest who've been doing it for 60 plus years, and they call them select service hotels. So they're not the hotels with all the amenities and all the restaurants and the spas. They're like the kind you go when you travel for business. So they're like the Hampton Inns, the Holiday Inns, those kinds of hotels. But they're such great operators that these hotels regularly have, you know, 4.5 ratings on Google, which is almost unheard of for that level of hotel. And so we got in touch with them, and this was back a few years ago, but we quickly realized that this was a great complement to the multifamily assets that we were acquiring, because with a lot of the multifamily projects we were doing, a lot of the payoff is on the back end when you sell, right? With these hotels, because they're already existing, already cash flowing assets, there's a lot of great cash flow. There's still some appreciation at the end, but not as much as these value-add multifamily projects. And so, for example, we acquired a couple of hotels last year that threw off over 11% cash-on-cash returns in the first year.
Interesting.
And you just cannot find that in multifamily, right?
No, especially on the first year. Usually that may be year two or three after a refi or something like that. But
And so it was a great complement. So for our investors who are looking to build a more balanced portfolio, we give them more options that way so that they can get some of the cash flow as well as some of the long-term appreciation.
What's the strategy with the hotel play? Is it similar to like a five-year hold and your goal is to, and is there like a value add where you're going to be renovating the units to potentially hire or command a higher daily rate, or how does that work?
In most cases, we're pretty much, it's just a buy and hold. There's usually some minimal renovation or operational efficiencies that we're bringing in, but not nearly as much as on a multifamily project. And so for the most part, we're just buying and holding and taking advantage of the cash flow and a little bit of appreciation during these 5 years.
Got it. Interesting. Any other alternative assets that you're looking at outside of the hotel space?
Yeah. So we've also done some self-storage investments, and we are also looking at both industrial and oil and gas.
Oh, interesting. I had a guy on yesterday that was talking about oil and gas. So as an investment, because you can offset your active income, which is kind of an interesting, I don't want to get into it because I don't know enough about it. So
me neither.
But yeah,
I have people for that now.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You just need to say, hey, you go figure this out and give me the report.
Report back.
Exactly. And what's the structure that you guys are building these out? Are you doing a fund model where people are just pulling money and then you're at the discretion to kind of go put that in the asset so you don't have to kind of do a syndication per deal?
Yeah. So that's a really great question. And that's evolved as well. And so in the early days, we were doing one syndication per asset. And so we really
raising money every time you have a deal, right?
So, exactly. Yeah. We really trained our investors that way and they got used to that. But then a couple of years ago, as the market started to shift, we started to see some of those signs. We saw that personally, I'll give you a great example. This was 2019. We did two back-to-back deals. It was the same market, pretty much down the street, but they were two separate syndications. And I had $50,000 to invest personally. And I said, okay, well, obviously I can pick the best one. So I'm going to go and look at these two. And I picked one, and that one turned out to be the one with the lower returns. So even I could not pick the winner. And so as things started, we started to see signs that things were shifting. We said, okay, to protect our investors' best interests, we have to build in diversification. And so we started to launch the fund model instead. And so in each fund, we would put around three assets.
Okay.
And of course, investors took some time to kind of get used to this. And so we've been doing that the last couple of years. But most recently, we've also added back in, because we keep hearing from people that there are a subset of people who want to invest in individual assets.
Yeah.
And so we've built that back in via a different type of offering, a crowdfunding offering. Mm. And we've just launched our first one recently. And the beauty of a crowdfunding offering, it's like a Kickstarter campaign, but you're actually, so you're actually like a Kickstarter. It's not an investment. You're just buying some tchotchke or basically donating your money. Yeah. But now you have these crowdfunding investment vehicles where you can actually leverage this model of crowdfunding to actually make an investment. And so what we've been able to do is crowdfunding is available to anybody. You don't have to be an accredited investor.
Right.
And so we've been able to open this up to all of our non-accredited investors. And there's not that limit in a 506B deal of 35 non-accredited investors. It can be as many non-accredited investors as we want. And we can set our own minimum investment. And so for this last one that we did, we set it at $10,000, where normally our minimums are $50,000. So it makes it much more accessible for people. And what's cool about it is they make it so easy for people. And we didn't let people do this because we didn't want people to get into further debt. But you can actually pay for an investment with a credit card, which is crazy.
Yeah, that sounds dangerous, but I guess
you rack up some points that way.
I guess it's one of the, I mean, I do that. I pay off my credit card at the beginning of every month, right? So I put everything on credit and then I get the points and I pay it off. And if you're diligent about that, I guess that could make a lot of sense, because to your point, like if you want to put 10,000 on your credit card, that's on the credit card, that's a lot of points. That's so it could be interesting. It could be dangerous though, if you kind of over-leverage yourself and can't make that payment. So that's interesting. So the crowdfunding is set up. And so is that a per deal or a per asset investment? Mm-hmm. So you're saying, hey, I'm launching ABC Apartments via this crowdfunding model. And so are you raising all of the equity, all the capital via the crowdfunding? Or do you have, you mentioned a couple of like JV partners or whatever. Are you also bringing them in to fund a portion of, you have to raise $10 million? Are you kind of breaking up how much you have to raise from crowdfunding versus other sources?
So it's a fairly new thing for us. So we're still trying to figure out exactly how it's going to fit into our overall model. But right now, the way we're looking at it is, I'm glad you brought up the each individual asset, because one criteria of crowdfunding offerings is that you cannot leave it open-ended like a fund.
Okay.
You have to have all of the assets. It can be multiple assets, but they have to be pre-identified. And it's just another way that the SEC is trying to protect the everyday investor.
Yeah.
And so the way that we're using crowdfunding offerings is we've got these funds for our accredited investors, and those offer multiple assets with one single investment. But for those people who want to invest in individual deals, then they can do so, whether they're accredited or not, through this crowdfunding vehicle. And that's a limited, it's a finite amount that we can raise. And so it's not open-ended like the fund, but it's a finite amount, but that will go directly into each asset, but alongside our investors in the funds. It's kind of a...
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you could invest in the fund and then you're diversified across the assets. Yes. But if you're like, I really like this one asset, you can go into the crowdfunding kind of invest directly into that. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
That's super fascinating. And I like the fact that you can set the minimum. So you could set it low enough for people to, quote unquote, test the waters, right? To, if maybe this is their first investment and they don't want to take 50, 100 grand and put it into one asset or even into the fund necessarily, but they're like, I'll try it out with 10K and just kind of see how it goes.
Exactly.
That's really fascinating. And I'm sure that's welcomed to your investors, both the, just the structure, but also just the ability to kind of have a little bit lower dollar amount if they are kind of either newer or, you know, maybe they're not, you know, millionaires, to kind of be able to spread that around. So I'm curious a little bit about a couple of things before we wrap up here. Again, mid-July 2023, recording this, markets, what kind of markets do you typically, or have you changed your markets that you're targeting because of the environment that we're in? And if so, kind of what markets do you like? Let's keep it maybe the hotels and the multifamily, just because storage and industrial and O&G, I'm not as familiar with and all that.
So for hotels, we're primarily in the Midwest. Okay. That's partly because our partners operate there and partly because these hotels are geared toward business travelers. And there's a lot of steel and industrial plants in the Midwest that make for great, the exact business traveler that we're looking to target. And so the Midwest is where most of those hotels are. As for multifamily, that's definitely an ever-evolving conversation. Mm-hmm. The multifamily fund that we launched and currently have open is, we geared it towards Sunbelt markets.
Okay.
So Arizona, Texas, the Southeast, the property I mentioned we have now is in Florida.
Okay.
Now, that's not to say that we'll continue to look in the Sun Belt. There are some metrics, of course, that are some trends that are saying maybe things are moving away from the Sun Belt. So we're keeping an eye on that. But so far, because that's our focus on just wrapping up that fund, we haven't quite shifted markets yet, but it's definitely something we've thought about.
Yeah. And I know that maybe you're not directly involved in all of the underwriting. I mean, I've been seeing the first quarter of this year, there were very few properties being listed. Now it seems like the last quarter, there's been a lot more, but there still seems to be a delta between what sellers are asking for, which still feels like 2021 valuations versus what maybe reality is and what, you know, a syndicator or operator would acquire in this higher interest rate market. Are you seeing the same kind of trends in deals that you're looking at?
Yeah, we are seeing the same thing. And I feel for them. I mean, if I had to sell right now, I'd want to get those higher dollars too.
Right.
I might not get it, but I'd still hope for that. Yeah, exactly. So I definitely understand where they're coming from. But yeah, we're seeing the same thing as well.
Got it. And I guess my audience tends to be people that are hardworking people. Maybe this is their first dose of kind of real estate investing, or they're still trying to build their portfolio. What's kind of some advice that you would give somebody that is listening to this and they're like, maybe they've done what you did. Maybe they've done some single family investments, like they bought a house and kept it and then bought a new house. And so they have some semblance of real estate investing. But if they really want to get more involved in the passive side of syndications, like, because it is more difficult to underwrite or understand a 100 unit apartment complex with all the complexities versus, oh, I can buy this house for X, my mortgage is Y, and I can rent it for Z, right? So what would you say is kind of a good first step other than continuing to listen to this podcast and others?
But, 100%. That was going to be the one.
I gave it away.
I really do believe in the power of podcasts, though, and I think that's such a great one. And that's how I learned to become more comfortable in this world, because there's just something about hearing somebody's voice. A podcast is such an intimate medium because you've got somebody's voice in your earbuds for 30 minutes, 40 minutes at a time. You feel like you're sitting down and having a fireside chat with them.
Yeah.
And so it really helps you to get comfortable and hear the language people are using as they're talking about these potential opportunities, hearing about the questions they're asking, hearing about how they're thinking about them. And that's really how I became comfortable with it. I started by educating myself through books and reading blog posts and things. And then to dig further, I started listening to podcasts and taking courses so that I could have that kind of live interaction.
Yeah.
And then when it made sense, I'd try to reach out to the people who were on the podcast to try to establish more of a connection, or to go to meetups to meet people in person. I find that relationship factor, if you can build yourself up a small community of people who are also passionate about this and who are also doing this, that'll help you become much more comfortable much faster.
Yeah, because most syndications are $50,000, $100,000 minimum, right? So you've got either meet somebody and get a really good gut feel right away, or it takes some time to build that trust with an operator to say, hey, Amy, I've got this deal. Are you interested in putting $50,000 into it? It's like, well, I don't know who you are, right? So you've got to at least kind of build some credibility and some track record for somebody's going to be just willing to kind of give it up. So This has been a lot of fun. I could kind of dig in more and peel back the onion even further, but I've taken up a lot of your time. So I want to kind of finish the podcast the way I finish every podcast with a 3-pack of questions that I ask every guest. So first one, what's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you on your real estate journey?
I think it was when that realtor in DC said that if we play our cards right, we could get it to be cash flow positive. I had never before heard those words put together just like that, but it made me super curious about what that meant because it sounded like exactly what I wanted. And so having that piece of, it wasn't even advice. It was just a kind of a shift in perception and what was possible made a big difference.
Yeah, that's such a, I mean, I wish my realtor would have given me that or mentioned that to me because I was like, man,
yeah,
we bought a condo. It's our first investment. So it was like, oh, we could have done exactly what you did. And definitely shout out to that realtor for sure. All right. What is your favorite business or real estate book that you're into right now?
Ooh, right now, let's see. I don't have a business book I'm currently reading. I'm on the spiritual kick, so I'm reading a lot of these personal development books.
Okay.
But I will tell you one business book that has stood out to me, and I go back to it time and again, is it's called Building a Story Brand by Don Miller.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't read like a business book. It reads like a life book. And it teaches you how to build a business in a very relatable way to tell a story and to make sure that your customers are the hero of the journey to build those customers for life.
Big fan of Story Brand and Don Miller for sure. So, all right, last question. If you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life just off of the passive income that you're generating, what would you do?
I would do exactly what I'm doing now, but maybe with some more first class airfare tickets along the way, I would think. But I really am living my best life now. I live in this beautiful home in the Berkeley Hills overlooking the bay, and my kids are in great schools, and my mom lives with us, and she has her own in-law suite in our house. And so it's a beautiful setup. I get to work when I want. I get to work with great people and be part of this industry where we're making a difference in people's lives. And so I wake up every day and I'm grateful and I feel blessed for what I get to do. And so I would say I have hit that and I'm doing what I want, but just, yeah, a few more first class accommodations. We went to Mexico recently and we did splurge and we got this 3-bedroom like villa that came with its own butler, which if anything will spoil you, a private butler on vacation will do just that.
Yeah. When my wife and I got married, we went to Mexico and we had for our honeymoon, we went and had a butler suite and it was not 3-bedroom, but it was quite lovely to wake up and be like, oh yeah, I want this and this. And yeah.
Yeah. Right.
It's something you don't want to get used to because you can't necessarily afford that always in real life. But
that's right.
Well, Annie, it's been amazing. I really appreciate you being on the podcast. If somebody wants to learn more about Good Egg and what you're doing, what's kind of the best way to get a hold of you?
The best place to go is our website, goodegginvestments.com. If you're new to passive investing, you can click the start here button and learn all about it. And the information is very brand agnostic. So if you're interested in investing with Justin, which I highly recommend, you can still go there and learn some basics and then come back to Justin with some maybe smarter questions to ask and really grill him, ask him those tough questions.
I love it. I love it. Annie, it's been a great pleasure. Really appreciate being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Justin.
See ya.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.